Welcome to the Who's He podcast with me, Phil.
And me, Scott.
And on this show, we're going to be talking about the introduction of Patrick Troughton as the second Doctor in our occasional series, talking about the introductory episodes that introduces a new Doctor to the waiting world. So we're not doing any news this week. There's no news to really speak of, even though the Doctor Who's nearly upon us, isn't it?
We sort of all had it now.
Yes.
Just waiting now, aren't we? Waiting game.
Yes, indeed. So it's nearly upon us. I think as we recalled on sort of Sunday the 21st, there was a trailer on late last night, actually.
Was there?
Yeah. Hmm? Doesn't show... it was on before Match of the Day last night. So didn't give away anything, really. Except I think episode two is very, very much a musical episode with a Doctor singing and stuff like that. So, and lots of dance routines, which I'm going to hate.
I'll just be... next week on Who's He Podcast, we talk about The Devil's Chord, where Phil just talks about how he hates musicals.
Yes, indeed. Indeed, yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what I think about that one. But anyway. Let's crack on then with Second Doctor. Now, we watched the first episode of The Power of the Daleks, which introduced Patrick Troughton. Obviously, Patrick Troughton's meant to be a different take on the Doctor, just to keep the series going. As William Hartnell, his health had become far too bad for him to carry on after the 10th Planet. So at the end of that, he regenerated, or as they call it in this, renewal. The term regeneration hasn't actually been used yet.
Until maybe the 1980s, sort of that period.
I think regeneration starts with, I think maybe with Pertwee, but I can't really remember. We'll find out when we watch it. Because that'll be the next one in this little series. But first, what did you think of it as... Because you like Patrick Troughton, don't you? Yeah. What did you think about his introduction in this?
It was good, but before I say anything, this is a really good story and I do recommend it. I've watched it all. It's great. Go and watch it if you can.
Yeah, because we watched the animated version. We didn't watch the any recon version of it.
I can't sit down and watch it. Can
you?
No,
I'm not a big fan of the recons. So we watched episode one animation version on the iPlayer, which is in black and white. It's the black and white version as well. And I've forgotten, before we get on to Patrick Troughton, I've forgotten just how good the animation was in those early stories that they did. I think it's progressively got worse, I think, the animation. I think they appear to put a bit more detail into like the characters' faces.
This one. This is the original one that was on the BBC iPlayer, and so it is a bit.
Some of it's a bit jerky in places when it's fast movements.
How would you put it? It's not so smooth.
Yeah.
Could you say that?
Yeah.
It's not so smooth.
It's just the limitations of that.
Then again, it was the first attempt of doing an animation like that.
Yeah.
So I suppose. But they've made really good ones in the future off of that.
Yeah. It's a cheap way of animating, bring back the stories. I know they're trying different things now, but anyway, this was like one of the first ones, and I think this came out first of all on the BBC Shop. I think it's before iPlayer even actually. The whole idea was you could
buy
old television content, and it never really took off. And they said it was going to be like all old TV on the... It'd be absolutely limitless and...
Is it still there? Has it gone?
No, it's gone. BBC Shop folded up. And then we got the iPlayer instead.
But so, none of the old stuff's on it anymore.
Well, the thing about the BBC Shop, it wasn't just TV shows. You could buy other merchandise. So I bought... I think when the shop was closing down online, they were like selling off stuff cheaply. And I got a Cyberman figure cheaply off of there. Yeah, so that's where I first saw this story. I did actually buy this the audio book version first. I think I bought it off iTunes many years ago with link and narration from Annika Wills. And I even enjoyed listening to the the audio of this story. I think it's a really good story. And I think it's a good episode one. I think it's a good way to introduce the Doctor, because let's be honest, this was their first attempt at it, wasn't it? It had never been done before.
And it was good. And thank you, David Whittaker, and sort of Dennis Spooner, because he was uncredited for episode one. But thank you for giving us that introduction to this Doctor.
Nails need growing.
Now look, the Doctor always wore this, so if you're him, it should fit now, shouldn't it? There, that settles it.
I'd like to see a butterfly fit into a chrysalis case after it spread its wings.
Then you did change.
Life depends on change and renewal.
Oh, so that's it. You've been renewed, have you?
I've been renewed, have I? That's it. I've been renewed. It's part of the TARDIS. Without it, I couldn't survive. Come here.
Yeah, I think it's a very, very good... A very good story, actually.
And it's different compared to now, because he's very mysterious when he comes out. Because now, because they didn't really know him, because it was new, they made the companions react with more drastically than they have done in the future with the new Doctor, because they're also meant to help introduce this new Doctor in this new term that they've added to the show.
Yeah, there's a few things in this are sort of like, even the Doctor's not sure. He keeps referring to the Doctor in the third person, doesn't he? So even he's not admitting to anyone that he's the Doctor.
Maybe he's not sure himself. His first incarnation. He's talking about the Doctor, the old Doctor.
Well, no, at that time, his first incarnation was just William Hartnell, so you have to look at him. None of this, like, you know, stuff fugitive Doctor and previous incarnations and all that. At the time, it was just he was the next Doctor.
He was just he wasn't the second Doctor, he was just another Doctor.
Well, no, he was the second Doctor, wasn't he, really?
But it wasn't...
He renewed. So, yeah, it was... They're trying to say it's the same person in a way, but with a slight... But obviously you could tell it's a different character.
Completely. They have completely different hair, completely different heights.
Well, his clothes regenerated as well. That was the first time that happened, and then it didn't happen again until Jodie Whittaker and David Tennant. Yeah. Or 13 to 14.
13 to 14.
Yeah, so many years later, you know, 60 years later, more or less, they sort of, nearly 60, they do it again. But no, I think it's a good introduction to him. I think you get the bit with the mirror, he looks in the mirror that he gets Ben to hold, and he sees Hartnell reflected back at him for a moment. So I think that sort of tips you the nod that it's the same person.
Mm.
I'd forgotten that Ben and Polly weren't present for the regeneration. It happened before they got back in the TARDIS at the end of the 10th planet.
Yeah, so I suppose they wouldn't have known. They just thought it's a random man, because they didn't know that he actually regenerated, because they didn't see. They were outside.
No, exactly.
Well, they sort of were outside, because they were coming... They were basically just about coming in as the Doctor regenerated.
Mm. Well, I think the thing with this as well, they were sort of trying to go towards the regeneration, or renewal, as they call it. In this one, it was more like a really bad acid LSD trip. You know, you get the bit when the Doctor's trying to stop the noise in his head, and you see the TARDIS console, sort of three of them, sort of like, like he's drunk, really. He's having it seems like a bad trip. So I thought that was a nice little nod. But really, he's sort of up and at it, really. There's no sort of post-regeneration angst or I need to lie down or anything. It's sort of up and into it. And I think as we go through this, I think Pertwee's one...
Wait for it. He just wants his shoes.
he doesn't do a lot in the first episode.
He just wants
Tom Baker does quite a bit. I think everyone seems to think Peter Davison doesn't do a lot in his first episode, but I think he does more than you actually realise. But in this one, he just sort of shakes off his headache and he's up and at it again, isn't he?
Yeah, he's just like, oh.
Yeah.
No. I need to do my work.
Yeah, so he's got some interesting little sort of character traits in this one. So he's called like the cosmic hobo. He's a bit like a scruffy, isn't he?
It's the introduction of the flute, which by
recorder.
Me,
he called it, yes, not a flute, it's a recorder.
Shh. Yeah. I'm not messing up my instruments. They look the same. They both got
holes.
It's
a recorder. I can understand people getting a bit... That got sort of phased out fairly quickly, the recorder thing.
It's not even...
He plays it a lot in the first episode. Instead of talking to people, he answers with the recorder, which I suppose would annoy...
It's quite alien-y.
That annoys Ben, doesn't
it's
it?
It's quite alien-y, though, because it's sort of like he's speaking through a recorder. He's like,
yeah,
he
exactly.
understands recorder language.
Yeah, he's answering through that, isn't he? So it's
like an
bit,
answer machine.
And that massive hat that he wears, that gets dropped fairly quickly as well, thank God.
It looks like he's in a circus, like the ringmaster hat or something.
I think there's a name. I don't know if there's a name for it. That particular kind of hat,
top, like a
or stovepipe. I think it's called the big because it's so big. It's called a stovepipe hat.
I was
going
to call it a huge top hat.
Yeah. Top hat's a little bit short, but I think it's called a stovepipe. I think because like a, I think the stovepipe was on a, it's like a factory kind of thing, massive chimney. It's called a stovepipe. So yes, I think that's where that. Yeah, but that gets dropped fairly quickly in his run. He puts it on the beginning, doesn't really wear it again for the rest of the, the episode, does he? Because we're not looking at the whole story, we're just looking at...
One episode.
Although yeah,
one
episode.
Go...
It's how it introduces the Doctor. What's the immediate impact, I think, is the thing. I think it does. I think he does. You know, and I think it's a bit of a masterstroke as well, just to keep audiences engaged, is to bring back the Daleks as well. You've got the Daleks... is the Doctor's most famous foe at that particular point, and probably still is now, actually.
And I also like how he knows that Ben and Polly are following him. They doesn't say anything until they're like, come in and meet the Dalek. He didn't say anything, he just kind of knows they're there.
Well, I've got a funny thing that might be lost in animation, because obviously, as everyone knows, or if you listen to this for the first time, I haven't watched Doctor Who before, this story is completely missing. There's no footage. I don't think any footage left. Well, there's a few clips. The Dalek factory isn't the Dalek factory. There's some surviving footage.
And in episode one, when Polly says he said he was a bit old, tired, and a bit thin in the tracking room, like that dialogue sign. That's surviving.
Yeah, there's not a lot.
And a bit
clips. Isn't
there's
it?
A little bit when the Doctor, you know, when the Doctor's like this with his face, but he sort of scrunches it up and is like this with his hands on his face, like why do I look like this?
Yeah,
that's
on there as well.
I think that's surviving.
Oh, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I know there's bits and pieces, but I think it's a good setup actually. I think because you've got the whole mystery of the Daleks. They're sort of like inactive in this spaceship that they've dug up on the planet Vulcan. It's been there for hundreds of years, so they think. So I mean, it is a good story anyway. But what happens with Patrick Troughton really sets up.
The
Doctor Who template for years to come, doesn't it? Because you've got the whole regeneration, the personality changes, obviously, with a different actor taking on the role. You've usually got you've got the companions not quite understanding what's happened.
Which sort of helps the audience.
Yeah, exactly. They're your eyes, aren't they? They are you, basically, Ben and Polly in this.
A lot of Ben and Polly are definitely... Compared to maybe a companion like Liz Shaw, they are heavily your eyes.
Yeah.
Because they're more relatable than other companions.
Yeah, well, I think they still do that now. You know, it's usually the Doctor his or her companion will be someone from Earth. But now and again, you get people like Leela, who isn't, Nissa,
Big
Adric,
Finish. Is it Chris?
Turlough, they're
is it
not.
Chris?
Yeah, there's the Big Finish stuff. Yeah, there's all sorts of different companions here. They're not from Earth. But
Frobisher
the pet. I'd love to see Frobisher brought in.
Yes, I would love to see this little penguin model.
I think
lots
of Doctor Who fans like to see Frobisher brought in.
Didn't Colin Baker make the idea of Frobisher?
No, I think it was. I think Frobisher actually came with the Seventh Doctor first in the comics, I think.
Maybe.
Not sure. I didn't used to read the comics back then. But anyway, funny you talk about the Seventh Doctor though, because there's a lot of the Seventh Doctor
in the Second Doctor.
In the Second Doctor, yeah,
although,
or vice versa.
By the end of the Seventh Doctor's era, though, he pulls away from that jokiness and moves towards more of a dark side.
Yeah, but you can tell with I think early in this episode, you know, they haven't really sort of gone into his character too much, but I think it's all. You could tell underneath he's sort of a bit sort of absent-minded and a bit bumbling, but there's something calculated.
There.
Yeah, like the thing where he's playing this sort of little game with Bragan and Hensel and Lesterton about being the was it the not the administrator, what's he called in this? The inspector?
Whatever it is. Or something?
Yeah.
Oh, the examiner.
That's it. I couldn't think of the word. So he's playing a little game there. There's a sort of manipulation, of, which is something that Seventh Doctor used to do as well. So there's a lot there. The thing with hats and picking up bits and pieces, that's Eleventh Doctor.
Just being silly.
Crazy. But underneath it all, he's figuring things out and calculating.
Like the 11th Doctor.
Yeah, so I mean, so it's all like a facade, really. But underneath it all, he's even in this early days, the very first episode that he's in, you can tell there's something else going on in the back of, you know, behind it all.
That feels a bit like the ninth. With the ninth Doctor, it's more darkness, but you can tell there's something there that's happiness, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's like that, but the opposite way around.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he's always like, oh, my planet, my time war. And then sometimes he's just like, whoa, like that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So how do you think he works with Ben and Polly in this one? Because they're quite sort of, Ben's really disbelieving.
Polly just sort of goes with it.
Yeah, because of the whole ring, Hartnell's ring falling off his finger. And it doesn't fit, is it? Because he's a different person now. But I'm just trying to think what it would have been like back in 1966, watching this.
The original. I mean, you could actually probably ask fans that are old enough to remember it, and they'll probably give you as much detail as you can know.
It must have been confusing to what I mean. At the end, you know, the end of the 10th Planet, you watch him sort of regenerate or renew into this other person. Even though the surviving footage of that, it's difficult to tell because they're both lying down, and I always thought Trout looked exactly the same as Hartnell with the face he was pulling because the picture quality was so poor. It just looked like the same person, even in the animation. I don't actually know if when Power of the Daleks was broadcast, whether it started with that cold open of the regeneration again, but it does on the animated version, doesn't it?
So
you're going to look it up now, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm going to carry on.
Scott's quickly Googling whether this actually happened. It's only after watching it again yesterday, I completely forgot about...
But you know what's funny? It's weird, this episode, because we know that Ben and Polly did work well with the First Doctor, so I suppose they would be quite surprised to see this new man. But behind the scenes, William Hartnell and them didn't get along as well as you think they would.
How do you mean?
Apparently, they didn't click as other actors did with him, if it makes sense. Like, when they first started as companions, they didn't sort of click. William Hartnell just didn't.
Yeah, well, but
he was unwell, so...
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
But he didn't... Then again, they are really different doctors, so I understand what's going on.
Yeah, the other thing as well with this one, people didn't have to wait that long to see what happened with the Doctor, because the final episode of The 10th Planet was broadcast on the 29th of October, 1966, and then I had to wait till the 5th of November... To see the new Doctor. So it wasn't like now when I was a kid as well, you had to wait months to see what happened in the first episode.
It depends if it's unlike this and Caves of Androzani, you don't need to wait because it's literally the week afterwards
I mean, the Twin Dilemma ended off that particular series because he didn't want audience to wait a whole year to see what the new Doctor was going to be like. But in this, the way the Doctor was made back then, it was more as continuous, really, wasn't it?
They had a week
to wait before they actually... So it was part of the fourth season.
I suppose if you watched every... I suppose if you're a kid, it's sort of when that episode's on, you would want to rush to get to it because it's this mystery that you want to figure out. What's happened to the Doctor? Is he okay?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Where's
the Doctor? Yeah, I mean, it was. I mean, I think really it was. I mean, Doctor Who was starting to sort of drift off a little bit, and certainly by the time of Patrick Troughton's sort of final episode, it was at the point of being cancelled. So
because he was a new Doctor.
No, it was just the popularity was, and it was a bit of a. It's a shame, really, because his time on the show, there was a lot of late scripts or scripts got dropped, or
Patrick Troughton,
yeah. So and I don't think he particularly liked the heavy workload either, and I think that's what was doing in William Hart would come in as well. So
I think that's actually why Patrick Troughton left the role.
He didn't want to be typecast, because before then Patrick Troughton was a character actor, so he never actually starred in much at all. But he did star in Robin Hood. He was Robin Hood, I think, in the 1950s.
He actually worked with William.
Because do you remember that clip in Robot of Sherwood when they're going through Capaldi's Doctor looking at the.
I never watched it.
I haven't watched it. Well, no, he's going through sort of how Robin Hood was like, it's just a myth, it's not real. And then it flashed out a quick picture of Patrick Troughton as Robin Hood on there. So just a sort of little, if you know, you know kind of thing. So he didn't want to get typecast in one role. However, I think. Whenever you play, whatever actor plays the Doctor, they're always known as the Doctor afterwards. They can't escape it.
Unless you're like a really famous actor and you've done like a fame.
Even then, it's even now sort of like.
David Tennant.
Well, no, I was going to say Karen Gillan, actually, because she was in Doctor Who first.
Every time you're going to Amy done, Pond.
Yeah, and then she would be known as ex Doctor Who actress. They always open up with ex-Doctor Who actress. Or Jodie Whittaker. Now, Jodie Whittaker, the first female Doctor.
Or former Doctor.
Patrick Troughton will be the former Doctor, Patrick Troughton. That's how it... So I can understand why, you know, he was afraid of getting typecast. But it happens. It was so popular. It happened.
I mean, suppose it's...
Can't escape it.
Suppose it's quite nice to... be recognised as you're the Doctor, but if that's happening all the time, I suppose it's a bit like...
It could be quite limiting for an actor, I suppose, just being remembered for one thing and that all you get offered is roles like that.
Which he literally did after.
No, he didn't. You've got that...
A Hitch in Time.
Yeah, he plays a...
Mad scientist. Man,
who's got a time machine.
Professor Zara, yeah. Mixed with the Doctor.
Yeah, this was on Talking Pictures, wasn't it?
And basically,
it's a film made by the Children's Film Foundation. They used to run, I think, right until the 1980s. I think always used to be there was a kids quiz show about films. I can't remember the name of it now. It was Michael Rodd used to present it, so I'll get my words out and present it, and then Brian Truman presented it afterwards. I can't remember the name of it now. I could Google it, but I'm not going to. But every week they used to have a film from the Children's Film Foundation.
There a film every week from that Children's Film
Foundation? No, not a film. They show a clip and people had to answer questions on it. They always used to show, they always just promote the Children's Film Foundation. I can't remember if they ever showed A Hitch in Time on there though, but there were, Children's Film Foundation, so we're going away off topic here, but they were shown as B-movies. So the first time I went to the pictures, I think it was going to see Disney's Peter Pan, and there was a B-movie on with it. You used to see two films, and the first film was a Children's Film Foundation film.
It's called Screen Test.
Screen Test. Thank you very much, Scott. Thank you. So that's where I knew those films from, really. And now and again, sort of Talking Pictures TV will air them on a Saturday morning as part of their sort of Saturday matinee sort of thing for kids, because they show the old Flash Gordon stuff. Anyway, we're going way off topic here. Don't talk about Talking Pictures TV. I know that the Daleks don't actually do anything in this particular story,
but
do they?
Mutant.
You see a mutant scuttle
first
under something.
Was it the first time you saw a mutant? I suppose it's
no,
not.
No, you see
the
it. No, you do see it in the Daleks, don't you? Hartnell's first Dalek story. You do see it. Well, a claw, don't you?
And it's quite it also gets revealed quite a bit in Remembrance of the Daleks.
Yeah, but this is the first thing. I don't actually know how it looked originally.
I wonder what it looked like.
Yeah, in its original form. The animation thing is like it scuttles across, like a tentacle blob thing.
Suppose they've made it sort of. I suppose it was green if the other ones were green, but the thing is, the Dalek mutant inside it was green originally, but then it turned like more of a peachy colour.
I don't know, mate, I'm colourblind, so I couldn't tell you.
It has
changed over the years. It has changed, but no, I think it's really a really good episode to introduce the Doctor. And I say there was nothing to compare it with though at the time. It's the first time being done, so there's no one to turn around and say, "Oh, they should have done this." Or I mean, each time the Doctor regenerated, it is different.
It kind of really has to be, because every Doctor is they're all the same person, but they have their own personality and their own traits.
Well, I mean the way they regenerate, it's different, because in this. It heavily implies it's to do with the TARDIS. The TARDIS is the one that helps him renew. Well, as that goes on, that's not the point. Even when it cuts when Trout regenerates,
you know,
it's something the Time Lords do.
But what
I
realise though, all regenerations in Classic Who are on the floor. Sort of, they're usually on the floor, and they're on the floor, and it's the Doctor's face, and like
sort of blurring into the next one.
But with the new Who, it's like a T pose with yellow.
It's more like an explosion
of
energy, isn't it? Yeah, it's all done standing up. It's a bit more dramatic.
Although Matt Smith's regeneration to be Capaldi was just he put his head back and just sort of appeared.
It was just like a bang, wasn't it? Done.
Bang.
I quite like that actually. There was no sort of overblown. Standing there and like with David Tennant regenerated. So we're going off topic. I wish we were talking about Patrick Troughton, but yeah, I like the simplicity of the early regenerations.
David Tennant was like exploding, like he was some sort of like he was a bullet.
Yeah, blew the TARDIS up, and I can't quite see why that would happen, but it made for an interesting ending to his tenure, I suppose, and introducing Matt Smith. But it's difficult to talk about. Regeneration without sort of or particular Doctor without moving on to the others in a funny way.
You can't compare it to anything.
No.
But
that's the thing, back then there was nothing to compare it to, so you couldn't go wrong with it really. It was almost sort of like a faultless regeneration.
And I like how it's not a new character, so they change the lead actor. They change the lead actors all the time in Doctor Who, but they change the lead actors quite often. Well, not often, but companions were changed often. So this is the first time it was done. So
yeah, I mean, I think it's the next episode you get introduced to Jamie, don't you?
Jamie
in the Highlanders, which doesn't exist either, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, I would like to see that story.
No, I'd like to see the Highlanders actually, just as
I want to see.
It's sort of one of the last sort of final hurrahs of a pure historical as well. They did.
It is a pure historical.
Well, they kind of, that's the thing with Troughton as well, because there's another thing that got introduced with him as well, is the Base Under Siege story.
Which were in nearly every single Troughton story.
Yeah. It was some sort of outpost somewhere that was... I mean, I suppose you could say it kind of started with the 10th Planet. That is a Base Under Siege story.
The last proper... I mean, going back to historicals, the last proper historical was probably... before the Gunfighters, because that was when they started to decline, and it was a sort of a musical with music and over it. There's a lot of singing and
it's a strange story, the Gunfighters. It really is.
Is it good?
It's all right. I'd say watch it, but
it's one of Dodo's actual surviving stories. So yeah.
I suppose when you get to bring it back to Patrick Troughton again, well, what he introduced, or the production introduced with him, as I said, the Base Under Siege, you get loads of different monsters and villains. No, throughout his time as the Doctor, because you get, Crotons, Quarks,
It's not Crotons anymore, it's Croutons.
Croutons.
The Croutons.
Yeah, so you get lots of different, none of them really sort of took off really.
They're
always trying to find the next Daleks.
Like Mechanoids.
Yeah.
Which were actually they weren't that bad, to be honest.
Not that bad. but then, you also get introduction of the Time Lords at the end as well.
And you really properly get. You could really say that the Cybermen was Patrick Troughton's villain. It was
definite
villain.
Where, sort of like Hartnell's was the Daleks.
Definitely the
Daleks. Troughton was definitely the Cybermen.
Pertwee was definitely the Master.
Yeah.
The Fourth Doctor, Did he have
Didn't really have one.
No, the fifth Doctor probably homes back to the Master.
Master again.
The sixth Doctor, the Valeyard. I'd say the Valeyard.
Well, it's only one... It's one whole huge
14-part story.
Yeah, it wasn't throughout the whole... It's just for one season, though, wasn't it?
Seventh Doctor. You know?
Didn't really have one.
So every Doctor seems to have their... Nearly every Doctor seems to have their villain that appears in every single season.
Yeah.
Daleks.
Yeah, exactly. But... Yeah, no, you're right. Trant certainly was Cybermen, and that they sort of evolved the look of them as it went on. In almost every story, really, because they sort of, like, you know, the moon base, they've evolved from the 10th planet. Then he gets the wheel in space, they've changed again. You get Invasion, they've changed yet again.
My favourite design's the moon base.
Moon base one.
I love it. They have Sontaran fingers. They're free.
They're three fingers. Yeah, exactly. Like and of course... Tomb of the Cybermen as well.
Yeah. Back on topic.
Yeah.
Come on.
So yeah, but I like what they do try to make the Doctor different. They play to sort of Patrick Troughton's strengths. You know, as an actor, and I think it's really, really, I think the Paradox episode one is a good introduction to the Doctor. I think actually it preserves the mystery.
Mm.
You sort of, I think the audiences at the time might have been in two minds, like Ben and Polly were, of is it really him?
I mean, we
didn't see him change.
Ben definitely was.
Ben and Polly didn't see him. Polly's a bit more believing, but Ben doesn't. He doesn't believe it at all.
Polly's more open to the concept of most things, like time travel and the smugglers. More open to that than Ben was. He thought he was in the same year they just moved.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But no, I think it's really good, and what a genius way to keep your show going. Really, it's ingenious. No other show's ever done it before.
I suppose they
might change the lead actor, but they're still playing the same person. It's not like they never acknowledge the fact that it's a different person, but in this they do, and it's a genius thing to do. Even if it's sort of like that you might just keep the show going for a couple more years, you know, 60 years later.
Boom.
Still here. Okay, we did have a bit of a gap in between, but, you know, 60 years later, it's still here.
That was Michael Grade. Looking at you over there. You.
Mr. Grade. So, okay, anything else you want to say about...
No, that's everything.
So do you think he made an immediate impact?
Yeah.
In his first episode, I do as well.
I mean, he must have, because every Doctor's homed in on that Doctor... Even if it was just for a really small, not even thought about character trait, they all home in on that one Doctor.
Yeah. And obviously more stuff happens and he builds the characters as it goes on. But I think they try to, you know, the thing with the recorder and the hat and the scruffy clothes. So they do sort of make it like, you know.
I prefer it when it's about
a different take on the same person.
I actually prefer it when it's about the Doctor and not about the companion. Focus on the companion as well, but when it's not all based around the companion, the companion's like a superhero in disguise, and
yeah,
you know, it's nice to have a Doctor be the main focus.
But as you said, when we watched Unearthly Child. No, it was Ian and Barbara. It was more Ian and Barbara were the main people in it. The Doctor, he's in for half the episode. But it's all still more about Ian and Barbara. Because at that point, the Doctor's... He's not really the hero of the story. He's the antagonist. He kidnaps them.
He's sort of evil.
In a funny way. But in this, obviously, 3 years have passed. The Doctor...
The
viewing public know who the Doctor is, and of course you've got this different person taking it on. It must have been a bit weird for people watching it, because it's still the same titles and everything. It's still called Doctor Who. You still got Ben and Polly there from the previous story, but you've got a different...
Even though they do only go like maybe four stories or three stories
but
later.
But you still got this thing of there's a different person playing the Doctor now, and it must have seemed weird for... Now we just accept it. Everyone thinks... What's the next Doctor going to be? I mean, everyone waits to, you know... I think even non-fans of Doctor Who now...
They're just sort of waiting.
They sort of, who's the next Doctor? Everyone's got an interest in it. Even though they might not watch the show...
It's a big event.
Exactly. And this is what started it all. This first episode started it all. So...
Thank you, David Whittaker.
Thank you, David Whittaker. Thank you, Patrick Troughton. Indeed. Mm-hmm. Indeed. So, okay, I think we're just about done, aren't we? So, next episode, Paul will be back, and we'll be talking about a Big Finish story, Phantasmagoria, starring Peter Davison and Mark Strickson. So we'll see what you think about that. That'll be out next Sunday. So that's it, Scott. So we might squeeze the Third Doctor in before we get to the new series of Doctor Who, I think.
Yes, I mean, it's not that far off, so...
I think we might just about squeeze one more in, I think.
We can maybe fit two, or maybe one in.
Maybe
between.
One. We'll see.
We'll see what happens. Might fit a double whammy.
Who knows? So, anyway, folks, until next time, it's goodbye from me, Phil.
And goodbye from me, Scott.
Goodbye. Thanks for listening. You can download this podcast from iTunes, Amazon Podcasts, Spotify, and through your podcatcher of choice. If you would care to leave us some feedback on iTunes, that would be very much appreciated. You can also find us on Twitter at @whose_he_podcast, on the Who's He Podcast Facebook group, and through our website, whose-he-podcast.co.uk.